Good morning, everyone. Hello, everyone. Maybe you're listening in the evening or the morning or the day. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life on this wonderful Sunday in London, from London. In the London time zone, it's 9 a.m.-ish, which is the time we go live every week on Facebook. And this then gets put into the world by the amazing Justin and all of his technical skills into podcast platforms and websites and YouTube and everything. And we're really grateful to be here as usual with a wonderful thing this week, which is Justin's writing about the work that we do in the world. That is to do with turning towards one another as coaches and as people who are able to be with others in their difficulties, problems, suffering, joy, excellence, new discoveries. And it's so wonderful, Justin, that you've written something that's specifically about our work. And I'm really excited that we get to talk about that today. So I don't think we've done that very much explicitly. We kind of point to it and hint about it every now and again. And this feels really excellent to me that we're going to be doing it together today.
Good morning, Lizzie, and morning, everyone. Afternoon, evening. Yeah, I have to keep on remembering that. People listen at different times. Yeah, we've been doing this for how long? We're in our 7th year. And I think, Lizzie, that everything we've ever done in this conversation is an expression of our deepest commitments and also an expression of the kind of work that we do in the world. They're not separate from one another at all. But we very rarely talk about it. So now and again, it seems like a good idea to do. So it's lovely to be able to read this and to talk about it. And hello and welcome to everyone. I always feel very grateful, Lizzie, that we get to do this really because other people join us. It's the great engine of this conversation is that there are other people we know are with us. And we had the chance to meet. I had the chance to meet some of you for the first time last weekend when some people came to be guest coaching clients on our professional coaching course. I think we spoke just after that, actually, Lizzie, last time. But very much those of you who had listened to us and then joined us in person for that experience last week, you're very much in my mind, as is everyone else who's with us. And I think I wanted to say, Lizzie, this morning, just to remind everyone, if you want to support us, if you find that this body of work that we're producing, these conversations that you get to be in are impactful for you and helpful for you, and you want to celebrate that with us, you can head over to the turningtowards.life website and click on support us. And it takes you to a wonderful thing called Buy Me a Coffee. And you can leave us a note, buy us a coffee or many coffees or whatever you want, and by way of supporting us, and that really helps us to keep on doing this work, which is such a joy to do. And the other place I want to point you to is wearethirdspace.org. So you'll probably all know that Turning Towards Life is a third space project, a third space conversation. And what we're going to about to talk about, you and me, Lizzie, is really the work that Third Space does. So it's a good place to look. So this source is, as always, on in our Facebook group, on our website, and in all the notes that come out with the YouTubes and the podcasts and Spotify and all of that. It's called What Story Do You Live In? To live in the world as a human being is always to live in the middle of a story of one kind or another. We all live in a world of interpretation, the particular way we each make sense of the world. The interpretations we live in profoundly shape the experience we have of life and the possibilities that open and close for each of us. So, shifting our interpretations into ever more life-giving forms might be one of the most important ways we can play a part in our lives. In other words, examining and changing the stories we're living can be a way to bring about new kinds of personal and collective freedom. The freedom of thought, feeling, and action we need in order to respond fully to our lives. One of the intriguing aspects of the interpretations we live in is that they're often invisible to us. We may have come by them deliberately and then forgotten them in the midst of the habit and repetition of day-to-day life, or we may have entered them into them unconsciously taking them up in response to the surrounding culture or the family systems we grew up in when we were small. And when they're in the background in this way, it can be hard to see how much they shape us. There's a sense in which it's easy for us to belong to an interpretation rather than having our interpretations consciously and purposefully belong to us. And this is where integral development coaching can be helpful, because a skilled coach can be of support in helping us first see and then shift the stories in which we can live, often in liberating and life-giving ways. It can be wonderful to have someone who will help us observe what we've not yet observed about the stories we live in, someone who'll partner with us as we enter into new ways of making sense of our lives that we may never have considered before, and help us find and practice new ways to live them. In this way, we can come over time first to have our stories rather than being had by them, and then to make new ones that can serve our lives more fully. It's a very creative, joyful, and compassionate role to play in support of another person.
Thanks, Justin. I want to invite all of us to take a deep breath if we're listening and we're able and we're not operating machinery or something. But listening to Justin, I can feel in myself that this is a discombobulating kind of source. And so it always helps me to have a breath and let myself be spacious in the receiving of this. So here we go again. To live in the world as a human being is always to live in the middle of a story of one kind or another. We all live in a world of interpretation. The particular way we each make sense of the world. The interpretations we live in profoundly shape the experience we have of life and the possibilities that open and close for each of us. So shifting our interpretations into ever more life-giving forms might be one of the most important ways we can play a part in our lives. In other words, examining and changing the stories we're living can be a way to bring about new kinds of personal and collective freedom, the freedom of thought, feeling, and action we need in order to fully respond to our lives. One of the intriguing aspects of the interpretations we live in is that they're often invisible to us. We may have come by them deliberately and then forgotten them in the midst of the habit and repetition of day-to-day life, or we may have entered into them unconsciously, taking them up in response to the surrounding culture or the family systems we grew up in when we were small. When they're in the background in this way, it can be hard to see how much they shape us. There's a sense in which it's easy for us to belong to an interpretation rather than having our interpretations consciously and purposefully belong to us. This is where integral development coaching can be helpful, because a skilled coach can be of support in helping us first see and then shift the stories in which we can live, often in liberating and life-giving ways. It can be wonderful to have someone who will help us observe what we have not yet observed about the stories we live in, someone who will partner us as we enter into new ways of making sense of our lives that we may never have considered before, and help us find and practice new ways to live them. In this way, we can come over time first to have our stories rather than being had by them, and then to make new ones that can serve our lives more fully. It's a very creative, joyful, and compassionate role to play in support of another person.
Thanks, Lizzie. It's wonderful to hear that read, actually, to feel it being read back. Well, I was thinking as you were talking about an example for me of having lived in a story that I haven't been able to see for a long time, that somebody recently did exactly this with me, that's been so incredibly helpful. So I thought it might be a place to start to talk about this, might be to start to talk there with an example of something. I was sitting with the person who's my coach quite recently, and having put a lot of thought over recent months into the kinds of work that I do and the way that I work, and really having made a lot of progress in having made a kind of working life that really suits me in lots of ways, I sat down and I was saying to her, I don't want to do any of this. I feel like I want to run away from it all the time. I feel like having made it, I want to get out of it. And it was very confusing and very frustrating for me to find myself having poured an enormous amount of attention and good heart into really consciously designing a whole way of thinking about my work and then engaging with it, and to find myself speaking to her about all the ways in which she didn't want to do any of it. And she listened to me for some long time, and we have known one another for a long time. So she's come to know the kinds of stories I tell about my life, but also the ways in which I think about my life. So she's been one of these people who has really deliberately paid attention to not just listening to what I say, but watching the kind of the way in which I'm in relationship to the whole of my life. And I really trust her. So she listened to me for a while, and then she said, I don't know how this will sound to say this, which is often a way to say something new and fresh into someone's life that is unexpected. She said, you seem really committed to turning things that are joyful to you into things that feel sad and unwelcome. And I sat there, I was sort of really taken aback. And then I thought about it for a while, and I thought, oh, yes. When I look at it, there is something in me that I often don't pay any attention to at all. It's like it's completely in the background. It's like the air or something, or like the weather or something, you know, it's like I don't notice it. And it can take that something in me, can take anything that I really love, not anything that I really love, but many things that I really love, and quite quickly turn it into a kind of sadness or a kind of sorrow or a kind of fear. And it's a story. It's a thing I do, but it's also a story, an interpretation that I'm starting to see that at least part of me lives in quite effectively, which is receiving joy, particularly when it's come from my own hands, in this story is somehow unacceptable or unwelcome, and it must be turned into something else so that it can be not too dangerous. So I can do it. I can be very joyful about many things, but there are lots of things in my life that I've started to realize simply because I had somebody who was willing to show me a story and interpret. It's just an interpretation. This is what one must do with joyful things. Who could bring from the background something that I've been doing most of my life and could bring it into the foreground so I could see it and we could look at it together and I could start to imagine new possibilities. There's lots I could say that I won't get into right at this moment about how come this pattern and why this story and where did it begin and how did it go into the background so I couldn't see it and all of those kind of things. But the really magical thing about it is having had someone who doesn't live in that story with me point to it and give it some simple language that I could understand, I'm now starting to practice living into a whole different interpretation, which is turning joy into joy and being a person who turns fear into joy as well, which had never really occurred to me, ever, ever, ever. And there are very straightforward ways I can practice it. One of the ways that I'm practicing to start with, that she's been helping me with, is simply noticing every time this turn that I make inside me, that I make it. Turns out I make it in lots and lots of places. So I've just been observing myself. You know, get up in the morning and I'm brushing my teeth. And it's a lovely sunny day, and poof, there I go, I turn whatever it is. So it's opening up a giant new vista in my life. Actually, really, right now, a really giant new vista. And I'm finding myself able to spot the story, to notice when it's in operation, to practice something that helps me to choose a new story. And that is beginning to change many circumstances where I notice that I get quite quickly into carrying around some kind of fear or contraction or grief or wanting to leave or. This is the best example I have of what this work is because I'm right in the thick of it.
What's arising in me, Justin, as you're talking, is the kind of safety that's needed for somebody to be able to say these things to you. Like, someone could say that to you. Like, I don't know how this is going to sound, Justin, but you have a way, I think I can see, of turning joy into fear. And you could be really defensive about that and say, how dare you see something about me that I haven't given you permission to see? And why are you watching me? And why are you analyzing me? And and most people in our lives don't really have that permission to tell us things about us. And I was just tuning into the relationship, the long relationship you have with this person who's supported you so much, and how extraordinary it is that we can be in relationship in a way that we can say these things to one another. And I think that's one of the beauties of this particular way of working that we have in amongst other things in our working lives, Justin, is that we are very much interested and cultivating a way of being in relationship with each other that we can tell the truth. I think the word truthful in here is somewhere in here, that we can really bring what we can see, but that it comes in when it can, according to the state of the relationship that we're in, so that we're cultivating safety and trust with one another. And then inside of that relationship dynamic, we can bring something truthful, because only then might you be able to see it and not be defensive about it, because these places are also tender and protected, and they have very, very good reason to be here. So whatever the mechanism is inside of your life of turning joyful things into fearful things probably has some safety mechanism inside of it that means that if somebody threatened that strategy, you'd be quite cross with them. Parts of you would come forward and say, excuse me, no, that's exactly what I should be doing. That gives me what I need, or that makes everything okay, or something. And so when someone can point it out in service of this lovely language that you have, Justin, of things being life-giving, like, I can feel when you say it, the life-givingness of joyfulness, as opposed to a joy being turned into something fearful. And I'm really appreciating that distinction, but also what's needed in order for that to happen is quite a powerful thing, which is a safe relationship where we are up for being told things about us that we can't yet see. When we're blind to things, it's because we've put them there for a very good reason. We put them in a blind spot because we don't want them to be seen, when in reality, of course, we walk around displaying everything to everyone all the time, and we think we're hiding it, and we're not. So it's a really tender thing for someone to reach into the thing that we think we're hiding, and we think we've got really wrapped up, and nobody can see that that's what I do. And then when someone can see it, and of course everyone can see it, but we protect it so much that we kind of keep people away. When someone gets permission to come in and say, well, I think there's a way that you do this, or there's a way that you're living that has this come forth. Yeah, I can just feel the tenderness of that, and the kind of permission that's necessary, and the kind of relationship that's necessary in order for those conversations to happen and for them to be received, and for it not just to break the relationship because someone said something to me that I didn't want them to say, because that means that they can see all of the kind of, I don't know, I'm trying to find the kindest word, but the kind of facade I'm putting up, the kind of protective shield I have up so that that thing doesn't get touched or poked. It's very beautiful and also tender, and it's a skillfulness that clearly, and combined with the relationship and the field that you're both in, but that the person who's been in conversation with you all these years, Justin, a skillfulness that she has that enables her to point to things and to say things and for you to be able to receive them.
I'm really taken by this language, Lizzie, that you're using to describe the situation that we're in as humans, which is that we take up patterns for really, really, really good reasons when we take them up. I'm sure I know that this pattern in me, I took up for a very good reason. Actually, we don't always know why we take them up. Sometimes we know, and sometimes it sort of came down to us like the particular circumstances in our family system that were shaped by the generations that came before, for example. And it can be really hard to see how on earth did I begin this? But we begin as something. Sometimes we know and sometimes we don't. And it's a way of the facades that we put up are, I think one way to talk about them is all these patterns that we get into are a way of trying to make the world safe for ourselves. They're a way of trying to control the world so that it will go a particular way. And I can see in myself that joy into sadness or joy into fear played a particular role in my life. Now I can see it. I can starting to see what it's for. And we all get into doing that because particularly the ones that start when we're quite small, we're small and the world is big, and we better find some ways of having a bit of grasp on the world because it's risky being small. You're really dependent upon other people. Better find some ways of sort of having some control over the world. So it makes all kinds of sense. Then I really love your language that the thing we're up to that we're very committed to keeping secret. In fact, I think if we've talked about different parts of us many times on this, the one way you could think about it is there are some protective parts of us that are very, very keen that we don't see the pattern because the pattern, if the pattern's protective and I see it too easily or too quickly, I might change it and then oh, who knows what will happen. So the patterns that we live in, the stories that we live in, are very often hidden from ourselves. And then this is the, now I'm getting to the bit. Very often other people can see them. Like it's the secret. It's the last thing that's actually a secret. It might be secret to me, but everybody else can see it. But also, as you're saying, that because they are understandably protected by very tender parts of us, it's just not on most of the time for somebody with whom we don't have really, really safe, mutual, warm, truthful, open relationship to come up and tap us on the shoulder and say, Justin, I can see that you do this thing all over the place. That is not going to go down well for most of us. It's certainly for me, you know, I get frightened and defensive and, you know, all kinds of things because that's the way the pattern works. So we really do. So I'm really glad we're talking about this because what I wrote here in a way is talking about this way of what this person was doing was talking to me about me and helping me see not just what I'm up to, but the whole how, the whole way that what I'm up to makes sense, pointing it out to me so that I've then got some choice. That's the method, maybe that's a way of talking about it, or the orientation is probably a better way. But what you're bringing in is the kind of relationship we need and the kind of person we need to be. And I know from the people who have been the real coaches to me in these ways, have been people who I can totally trust their integrity and their goodness and their deep, deep, deep care for my life. And they model warmth and sensitivity and openness and courage and truthfulness. And what they do, I came across this word the other day, actually, Lizzie, is that they are encouraging of me, as in, help me kindle my own courage. The courage I need, the heartfelt courage that it takes to be able to see something and then wonder about it and then invent a response. And frankly, giving up, practicing turning joy into joy rather than joy into fear is tender territory and quite anxious for me because it means I have to give up strategy that seems to have been doing something that I seem to have thought I've needed. So the ability to be present and open and contactful, and for those of us who are receiving coaching in this way, to really feel that our coach is on the side of our lives, not necessarily on the side of the patterns that we've had, the stories we've had that don't serve, but in a much deeper way on the side of our lives, and we can really feel that they are on the side of our lives, makes it possible for someone to do this very generous act of encouragement, which is to say, Lizzie, I've got some language for what I can see you're up to. I've got some language to even as you're being with me now, Lizzie, I can see some things, and I wonder if I can find a way to give it language that will illuminate, and then we can wonder together about something that might be wider and deeper and fuller and more life-giving for you than this one. And like you said, mostly these kinds of conversations, they're not going to go well in the midst of ordinary everyday life for all of those reasons. So learning to coach in this way, as you'll know, Lizzie, isn't just learning a way of seeing this pattern of stories that we live in and how they go invisible and how we might bring them forward, but it's also learning to be a person who can be properly encouraging to others with all of the safety and all of the mutuality and all of the healthy power dynamics and all of the sensitivity and all of the creativity about language and how we might talk about things. And it's one of the reasons that I wrote here that it's a very creative, joyful, and compassionate way of being of support to another person, because it really calls on to do this well, calls on our the fullness of our humanity. We can't be this for one another in an automatic or robotic way. We can't be this for one another if we don't actually really dedicate ourselves to caring properly, fully about one another's lives.
So I'm really feeling just in the power and preciousness of when something is shown to us by someone that we trust. There's real power in that showing. But certainly in my life, when either I've seen something or admitted something to myself, or someone's told me something, and it's a dance between two people often, where you say one thing and it leads me to go, oh yeah, I can see this, but then I can also see this, which you haven't seen, but we're in it together, kind of thing. But when those conversations happen, when those, I don't know what to call it, like moments of light being shed on something that was previously invisible, something or some illumination happens. The really beautiful thing is that, so in your example of working with this person who's been supporting you, she didn't turn away and say, now I've seen that about you and you've seen that about you, I can't be in relationship with you anymore because I think it's terrible and you need to go. She stayed. And I think that's the real beauty of this for me, is that there is a way that, yes, we're living in these invisible stories. And when they get pointed out, it's very tender. And we thought we were keeping a secret, but it was on display because somebody can see it and we couldn't see it. And then the person who is this trustworthy person that you're talking about, who we can all be for one another, doesn't run a mile. Doesn't shame you for being that, doesn't ridicule you for having this dynamic, doesn't say, well, now you've crossed the line and we can't be friends anymore because you're a terrible person or something. I feel like that's the beauty of it, that we then don't turn away from each other or make it a bad thing. It's simply an aspect of our being that can be here and can be welcome, and I need not hide it any longer. I need not make it blind to me and you, even though you can probably already see it. I don't have to do that anymore because it got brought somewhere that's trustworthy and can hold it, and it doesn't need to be banished. And I think that for me is the encouragement. Like I know I take massive courage from all the times I've seen something new about myself that I didn't realize that was mostly quite shameful or embarrassing or not very nice or whatever I've had to bring forth in order to be more honest about my life and myself and the world I'm making for myself and others. When I brought one of those things forth and people don't run away, and which is kind of in some way why I was hiding them in the first place, even though they weren't really hidden. I feel like if someone doesn't run away and or judge me and tell me there's something horribly wrong with me, I think, oh, now I have more courage to face into more things now. So if you didn't turn away from that thing, when something else comes to be seen that I'm in a wrangle with, I can have courage in myself to firstly face it in me, but also have courage to talk to you about it because I know that you're not going to shame me or walk away or cut off from me or withdraw. And I think that's what the gift of that safety is that it allows me then to unfold into more of me and bring forth more blind pieces that need to be integrated, that need to be seen, that need to be here without defensiveness, so that I can be in this fully life-giving response to this existence of me having a body and energy and life and heart and lungs and breath to be had every day and relationships to be lived in and work to be done. And so I really feel the central kind of power of our work in the world in this piece of the conversation. And that's what I want to dedicate everything to.
One of the parts of this we haven't talked about is, the thing you said that very often the patterns or the stories that we're in, they've got these twin aspects to them. So one is they started for really good reason, and the second is often when we see them or we look at them, we feel embarrassed or guilty or maybe anxious about letting what it might be to let go of this. A lot of it's not easy to feel all of those things. And one part of it is having somebody with us who can help us to imagine a life-giving alternative, a deeper way to be in. So it's not just, oh, Lizzie, look at this thing you've been doing your whole life. But let's imagine together what else, how else might it be possible to relate? How else might it be possible to live? How else? So that creative act of imagining something new and life-giving. But the prior thing that we didn't talk about that I think is worth naming briefly is this can really only happen with somebody who is really prepared to see our goodness, who's able to name for us qualities and virtues and commitments that we have that are true, that are life-giving, that are already present. So I know there are a lot of people who told me, who if they told me that I was turning joy into sorrow or joy into fear, I would not feel happy for them to say that to me. And in fact, I'd probably be trying to avoid letting them ever see that at all. But if I'm in the presence of somebody who I know really has the interests of my life at heart and also can see, as is the case in this case, who can see my courage. Because living with a lot of fear takes a lot of courage, for example, and who can tell me about my courage, my existing courage, or my existing integrity, or my existing love, so that I can feel it and know it as true before we even get into talking about, let's talk about this pattern that you're grappling with that I can see that might be tender to talk about and might be frightening to talk about because who knows what you would do if you weren't doing that. And that's the way it seems to me that that is a hallmark of the way of working with people that we've dedicated ourselves to and that we teach is being able to in a really deep and but also very straightforward way, being able to see and name the goodness of the person that we're supporting and that we're working with. And when we know somebody else has, they are at our back in support of our goodness, in support of our aliveness, and have told us about it, then a lot of these conversations become possible, because they're not corrective or punitive. And, you know, I'm not telling you about a pattern in you because somehow you got to shake yourself up, Lizzie. I'm talking about this pattern with you because you and I together are dedicated to supporting the creativity that you are, and the courage that you are, and the integrity that you are. That's already part of our relationship. And it is quite a different stand to stand in the place of really trusting the essential goodness of people, and then talking about all the wrangles and difficulties that we get into when we're trying to control the world, or be bigger than we should be, or smaller than we should be, or whatever it is. It's really different to talk from that place together than it is to talk from you're coming to me, Lizzie, to get corrected by me. I'm going to be the clever one who shows you all the ways that you're messing up your life. And not that at all. I'm going to be the one who extends towards you to really be sensitive to the kind of extraordinariness that you already are. And then let's look together about all the twists and turns and wrangles and difficulties. And then let's imagine together what might allow your own goodness and wonderfulness and excellence to come through into the world more fully, in a way that's not as tortuous as the current way. It's a whole different frame to the way that a lot of people, even with very good intention, often try to help us, or it's a whole different frame to how we feel other people are often trying to help us when we feel like we're being corrected or criticized or something. That's what this work is.
Yeah, it's very different to feel like you're a problem versus you're a set of curious possibilities in the world. And it's so easy to feel somebody's implicit intentionality in that way. You know, when you start giving me advice and telling me what to do, and this is how I should fix things, and this is who I should be, I can already feel, just in the saying of it now, in this moment, I'm really not very interested at all, and actually very quickly start thinking about something else, or maybe start criticizing you in my mind for doing it. I'm certainly not going to do all the things you tell me about how to live, because inside of your talking to me in this way, I can feel like I'm a problem. That's really all I'm receiving, is there's something wrong with me. And so there's also a way of this methodology, this orientation, like you were saying, being very opposite to how we're normally treated in the world. So I think that is kind of a dominant narrative of human beings, is that we're all messed up and someone needs to come and help us and fix us and make everything okay. And we all very good intentionally do that to one another. You know, we're trying to, you know, somebody giving me advice is not out to hurt me. They're probably trying to help me. But because it feels implicitly like there's something wrong with me, it's very hard to be interested in it. But then when, as you say, someone comes along and sees the good intention in what I'm doing. So for example, if I come to you and say, listen, I'm late all the time, and, you know, it's really hurting my relationships and really impacting the way I live in the world, but you can see something really important that I'm dedicated to in my lateness, which might be thoroughness, or it might be self-care, or it might be being really considerate towards others in some way. Like, there's so many things that you could find in the practice of me being late, the habit, the pattern of me being late, that would really point to what's going on inside me, rather than, well, you're just a late person and that's wrong and you need to change it. So there's I think that's the other thing, that it's so creative. It's like really being curious about people is a creative act, and feeling into other people's worlds as we do with our own worlds, and wondering what's really happening here. What kind of goodness is being covered up because of the world that we live in and the kind of culture that we're in? What kind of goodness is being covered up by this pattern, and how can we point to that? Because it's right there. It's always right there. And I feel so lucky to have been shown the goodness in me when I've bought a place in me that's really not great for my life. And when I say some issue that I'm in that's really feels really, really hard, and somebody names my goodness inside of it, it's such a relief to hear it because it's right there. We're not all trying to make things difficult for other people or ourselves in our lives. We're not doing that. But because these things are blind and in the background and we can't really see them, it's really hard to get hold of it sometimes. So we need this. We need these relationships. We need these relationships to be able to tell us the truth and be able to liberate us from our own, like the prison of my own making that has me put all of this stuff somewhere where I think you can't see it, but you can.
That's such a wonderful example to end on, Lizzie. And I'll just say that as somebody who, in my teens and 20s, was habitually extraordinarily late for many things, hours and hours late sometimes, and had and knew it was happening, and all I could find was my own self-criticism and the criticism of others. What a liberation it was for me when somebody who knew me well enough said to me, I can see that the reason you're late is you're trying to take care of too many people. That what you're doing is taking care of people, which is exactly what I was doing. Let me help you think through, let's talk through truthfully about how you're trying to take care of lots of people actually ends up with you not being able to take care of many people at all. And let's think together about how the care that you are can get expressed in a world that's actually more meets my own longing to be of care to people, which mostly involved giving up trying to do too much of it, and so being late for everything and everyone, and having to feel and feeling terribly ashamed all the time, and actually really figuring out who and what I actually wanted to care for and doing that. And so that move to find love and care in the middle of it, to see how the difficult pattern is an expression of love, and then to find a way together to have that be liberated so that it, love can actually be love and not just annoying everybody all the time and feeling terrible about it. It's such a kind move, and it's so much better than correcting someone or just telling them to be on time, or gets right into the heart of things, that we humans are up to things because we care about them. And sometimes we're up to things that we care about in ways that cause us and other people enormous difficulty. And it takes all of this that we've been talking about in this time. Someone who's willing to be trustful enough and safe enough, and who can talk to us truthfully about what they see, and who's really dedicated to our goodness, for all of this to happen. So, well, we talked a bit longer than we often do, and I think that's because we could probably talk about this for days. There's so much to say. It's why we take a year to even begin to teach how to do this work on our professional coaching course. It's been lovely having this conversation with you, Lizzie, and I hope for all of you who are listening, it's also illuminating about what it is that we, you and I, and everyone in Third Space get up to, and also what many, many, many hundreds of people who are learning how to work this way with other humans, whether they're being coaches or just being humans helping humans in some way, all around the world are up to when they're learning and practicing integral development coaching. And there are lots of chances to learn it with us. You can come to wearethirdspace.org and see there's always things coming up, ways to start and ways to do bigger things with us. You're very welcome to go there. And I think it must be time for us to end. Lizzie,
It is.
thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week.